We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Quarantine. Yeah, here we go, baby. Get your popcorn ready, podcast. You got your boy right here, your host, T.O., and my other host,
Hatch, is in the building, ladies and gentlemen. Quarantine up. Woo, woo.
Yeah. You doing it. You know we quarantine. You got your boy. My hair is a little long, but it's all good. I still look good.
Man, you know what? I ain't had a haircut. I think it's going on 3 months, and I'm gully right now. I'm like a bear, but you know, I don't care at all. You know what
that's
I'm saying?
All right, but you know, we're gonna get cut right to it. We got our guy, Larry Fitzgerald of the Arizona Cardinals. This guy right here, I mean, he is like he has more lives than a cat. This guy's got more than 9 lives. This guy is, you know, a stellar career. I don't know what year is this for this guy. I don't know what it was.
Because his rookie year was 2004. He was the third pick in the 2004 draft.
So this is his 15th or 16th
going
year.
On, so this would be his going on his 17th year.
I mean, 17th year. Oh my gosh! Hey, yeah, this guy right here.
This is the grandfather of them all. It's like Big Ben.
Yeah, he's the last of the Mohicans, and this guy right here. This guy is steadily putting up numbers, steadily being productive. I mean, you know, you think about basketball players that have played and stayed with one team for the entirety of their career. Mm-hmm. Larry Fitzgerald is one of those guys. I mean, great character guy. I think he's been man of the year.
Yes, sir.
I mean, everything about this guy says first class, and I'm fortunate and blessed to have known this guy, know this guy. Yeah. We got Larry Fitzgerald coming to the show today, and I'm looking forward to chopping it up with him. And then again, he has a new addition in DeAndre Hopkins. He's now going to be playing with his quarterback Kyler Murray for year two. Mm-hmm. We don't know if this is going to be the last year for this guy, because last year was supposed to be last year. He's hanging on. So we're looking forward to talking to him.
Nephew was coming to the building, man. I met Fitzy when he was like 15, 16 years old. Like, he was our ball boy when I was with the Vikings, and he used to come around.
What?
Yeah, he was the ball boy. And we, you know, hey, kid, go do this, and hey, kid, go do that. He was washing our cars and all that stuff during the
I did hear that.
Yep. And we used to go to his high school football games. And like I said, stand on the sideline, watch him do his thing. And there was something special about his athletic ability. But again, when you get to know Fitzy, and you know, like I said, you know how he is. He's just a good character guy. And you know he was going to be successful throughout his career because of his character more than just his athletic ability. So, yeah, I can't wait to have Nephew come to the show. Get your popcorn ready podcast. You know, subscribe on the Himalaya app, wherever you get your podcast, coming up next.
Yep. And don't forget to subscribe on my YouTube channel. We got a lot of great content. We appreciate all the fans that have, you know, that are coming in every week to follow, listen to who we are, who our guests are. It's been an exciting, you know, a couple of months in quarantine. We've had some great guests on. So again, don't forget to subscribe not only to the Himalaya app or wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to subscribe to YouTube.
Sharing is caring, ladies and gentlemen. Get your popcorn ready podcast coming up next with our boy Larry Fitzgerald. Yee! Welcome to Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast with the Echo. My man, the Echo. T.O. is in the building.
No, ain't no Echo in here, nigga. My Echo today, boy. Hey, you the fourth best receiver on this telecast right here.
Wow, with only three of us.
Exactly. You the fourth best receiver out here. You know what I mean?
You know but what?
We got our guy, Larry Fitz. No, let me, what's your middle name, Larry? If not, I'm going to make up one. Larry Dwayne Fitzgerald.
You gonna give him a nickname? Larry Dwayne Fitzgerald is coming to the stage.
Yeah, I could probably Google it, but we're gonna keep it real. We got our guy Larry Fitzgerald in the building, entering his 17th NFL season.
Yes, sir.
7-time Pro Bowler, first team All Pro in 2008, second team All Pro 2009 and 11. 2-time NFL reception leader in 05 and 2016. 2-time NFL receiving touchdown leader
in
08 and 09. Man, our guy Larry, he will catch everything but coronavirus. Fitzgerald is in the building.
Yeah, Fitzy in the building. What's up, baby?
Oh, man, I'm chilling. Just getting back in the house. Had a little play a little golf today. That's about the only thing I can do to keep my sanity at this point.
Hey, how many times you playing a week right now that you on quarantine?
I only play on days that end with Y right now.
Every day, all day.
So, right.
So would you say that's your second sport? Like, football's first. Would you say golf is your second probably favorite sport?
No, I would say definitely golf is my favorite probably at this point, man.
Wow.
I never sore. You know, you wake up on Monday mornings.
Yeah.
Everything broke down. I got to slide out of the bed, you know, a little bit more leisurely, but the pay is nowhere as good.
How is your golf game, Larry?
No, I'm solid. I'm probably about a 2-3 handicap right now. I've been able to play a lot, so been able to work on it.
You going pro after NFL?
No chance.
They too good.
Dudes are too good.
But you got time, though. You got another five years to get right.
I don't think you really understand, Hatch. It would be like a dude coming off the street and just playing in the NFL.
In the league, right.
He knows that himself, so he knows how that is. He can't come off the league. He better play anyway. He can relate.
Hey, see, Fitzy, don't listen to him, dog. You know what I'm saying? He feeling real confident right now. That's all. He's feeling real confident right now.
Hey, Larry, he can relate. So that statement that you're about
to make, I can't relate.
It does not apply to him. Well, it does apply to him because he can't be a
hater all his life, Fitzy. You know what I'm saying? He gonna do what he can, dog. He gonna do what he can, man. No,
hey, so
we appreciate you coming to the show today, man. Again, we just want to kind of catch up with you. We know you're going on year 17, and you're the grandfather of the NFL right now. Now, how's the journey been? You know, because again, what going into year 17 is way different than going into your first couple years. How's this journey been for you?
Oh, it's been great, man. I think as a child, you know, you always grow up and you know you emulate guys like yourselves. Obviously, you know, working with you every single day. You know, when I was a child in training camp and forging that relationship, seeing with the hard work and you know being a seventh round pick from Langston and having to fight and scrap for everything that you had. And I remember just so happy for you when you got that contract down in Jacksonville, man, being out there. Those type of relationships, those are the memories that I had as a child, and be able to see you guys work the way you worked up close and personal really gave me a once in a lifetime perspective, because it was something I really wanted to do. And most kids grow up and they want to do this or they want to do that, but they don't get a chance to actually see it. It would be like a child being able to watch your dad as an orthopedic surgeon go in there and do knees and like get that in-person experience. And that's what made it so unique for me. But it also was an eye-opener because I knew if I wanted to play at this level, this is the standard. This is John Randall every day coming to work, you know, Chris Doman. Matthew Hatchett, Randy Moss, Dante Culpepper, Robert Smith. I mean, these are the guys that I had to emulate. This is the work ethic that I had to see. And then obviously getting a chance to watch T, you know, do his thing, you know, in San Francisco and Philly and Cincinnati and Baltimore. I mean, like, you know, those are the type of things I always dreamed about doing and emulating you guys.
Mm-hmm. So again, you know, you're kind of like the bigger receiver, you know, and right when you were coming in the league, that was kind of, they were transitioning over. Was like, who was the kind of some of the guys outside of, you know, the Viking receivers? I tell T all the time, like, we were the big receiving core, you know, but like, who are some of the guys outside of the Vikings receiver core that you looked at and kind of emulated your style after?
Well, so, you know, being a ball boy, I got a chance to watch up close and personal. So I always loved like Herman Moore. Herman Moore was, you know, 6'5", he can go up and attack the football. Yeah. And, you know, Antonio Freeman was really crafty up in Green Bay. I really like Keyshawn Johnson down in Tampa. I got a chance to see all those guys twice a year. Mm-hmm. And
J.J. Stokes.
J.J. Stokes.
Yeah. Long guy. Yeah. Long rangy.
And T, I mean, you somebody I always emulated too. Man, I feel like, you know, you always played the game with such a terrific passion and desire, just so competitive in everything that you did. You took great disrespect for somebody trying to step up to you, impress you. And I love that competitiveness. And, you know, I told you this a while ago. I mean, all the great plays that you made throughout your career. I mean, I think the one play that you made for Garrison Hirschman, you know, blocked for him for like 60 yards down the field, just bring his touchdown. Mm-hmm. You know, exemplified, I think, your true football character, because a guy who was selfish and didn't care about his teammates wouldn't put it all on the line for something that wasn't only going to be beneficial to him. So, like, those type of plays really stick out to me. I mean, everybody remembers the catch up the seam, you know, against
Giants,
the Packers.
Packers,
you know, like those type of plays. Obviously, those plays go down in history, some of the best ever be made, you know, in the playoffs and the implications behind it. But, like, those are real grit plays that I remember on that block. And, you know, those are the things that I remember and I always try to emulate.
Yeah,
appreciate it, man. I mean, going into your 17th season as a Hatch mentioned, what are your expectations? Like, do you, like, going into your 17th season, do you, obviously you have a young quarterback in Kyler Murray going into a second year. You now have another threat on the other side of you in DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah. What are your realistic expectations going into this season? Cause like I said, you've been to the Super Bowl once. I've been there once. We both came up short. Like, are there realistic expectations that you guys can, number one, get to the playoffs and then really compete for a championship, the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, you look around the league, the National Football League, teams that are able to compete at a high level, you see that are playing deep into the playoffs, all have prolific passers, right? You look at the Green Bay Packers playing deep into the playoffs last year. Look at the San Francisco 49ers with the maturation process, Jimmy Garoppolo playing deep into the playoffs. You look at Lamar Jackson, you look at, you know, obviously the Kansas City Chiefs. These teams are playing deep into the playoffs. Seattle Seahawks. I mean, these guys, because they have prolific passers, and we got a dynamic young talent in Kyler Murray that's going to be unbelievable for years to come. He's the rookie of the year, and it's only going to continue to get better and better, develop a voice and become a good leader in our locker room. And, you know, we're surrounding him with great weapons, you know, continue to improve in our offensive line. We got a two really dynamic backs, and obviously our receiving core got a lot better with the addition of DeAndre Hopkins. I'm really excited about our team expectations. From a personal standpoint, my expectations for myself never change. You know, the older you get, people's expectations of you change because they think as you get older, there's things that you can't do. But I look at myself as a more complete player than I was when I was, you know, 25 or 26. I can do more. I can still go outside the numbers and run routes and win. But now I can go inside and I can do things that I never was able to do when I was in my prime. I felt like going inside was disrespectful because I couldn't. And not so much easier to get catches inside if you're able to recognize and read defenses, to understand fronts and see what teams are trying to do to you. I mean, before the play's even called, I can look at the safety. I can look at the hand signals and tell what coverage I'm getting. You know, okay, it's quarters. Okay, we got the sell route. This is going to be easy. Make sure you stick them out bright and right. It's going to be, you know, like I know this before the snap. And so I'm a much smarter player. I know how to block much more efficiently and effectively. And so, I mean, it's just a completely different game for me now. You know, things I've slowed down, but the game is slowed down as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mental game now. And again, you guys – of course, you know, I don't want to leave out your boy Christian Kirk. You know, again, he's a dude too. So you, for you guys have three receivers who can really go get it, but now you're not the number one. You know what I'm saying? Well, you're the number one in your, because it doesn't change in your mind. You're the number one, but you have a guy on the other side of you that is what you were doing in your prime, and you've never had that. Is there going to be any change as far as how you look at that, though?
No, no. I'm elated to have somebody who can go out there and win one-on-one matchups individually.
Mm-hmm. It just helps you out.
Yeah, I know there's going to be times in the game where, you know, he's going to be double-teamed and triple-teamed trying to take him away. There's going to be opportunity for other guys to step up. I mean, I'm at the point in my career where it doesn't really matter, you know, who gets the reception. I just want to go out there and win. I want to be able to compete. You know, I have catches, I have yards, I have touch. I mean, I have every individual accolade that you could personally want. Now, as T said, you know, we played in the Super Bowl, but I don't have anything to show for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, you know, Moss would get double teamed and Chris would get double teamed, and I was like, I'm one on one. So I figured I would get the ball, but yeah, it never happened. So you go see some, you go see some one on one though this year, dog, for the first time in your career.
Hey man, so yeah, I saw your phone was ringing. Was that our guy, Mr. Robert Sarver?
No, that wasn't him. That was another one of my partners coming over. We just chilling.
Oh, okay. Yeah, tell Mr. Robert Sarver I said what's up.
You know I will for sure.
Tell him don't forget about me. You know what I mean? I know it's been a minute since I've been to AZ.
Always got a place out here, man. You always got a place. You can see, come out here and get your eyes dotted like you did last year at Apollo's birthday party, man.
Wow, oh, there it is, huh? Hey, tell the truth, hey, huh? Hey, according to him, let him tell the story.
T always talking about he could play basketball, this and that. You know, I'm a quiet cat. I don't really do all that talking. I just let my place be talking, and I wasn't wide open out there. It wasn't even close, man.
You know Larry. What? I believe because the much talk that he does about his basketball Larry, games, is this what I've never Larry, seen. This what I never see wins. So
Larry, this is what we do in 2020. We
I mean, is he wait? Is T? Is he lying? Is he lying though?
Larry,
is he lying?
T.
Is he lying? You don't know what you're talking about.
Is this what we're doing right now in 2020? We just lying to people?
Hey, we just trying to tell them.
That's what I remember, T. That's what Larry. I remember.
Oh, so what happened Larry. Then, T? What happened?
Dog. Hey, Hatch. Oh, have mercy, Jesus. Oh. Lord, have mercy. I'm finna pray for you. I'm finna pray for you, Larry. Larry, we just gonna lie like that?
Hey,
Hatch, we was in Mr. Sarver's house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have he has the court from the All-Star game in his house. So, you know, I'm just out there stroking. Oh, dude, I don't know who was the dude in there that was in there. He just kept giving me the ball. I went all around that court, bro. I'm talking about straight panties. I'm talking about nylon. Scotch. I'm talking about around. And these were NBA threes. Larry, am I lying, Larry?
Yeah, you did that thing, but the horse game wasn't like that though.
So okay,
what are you talking about, man?
Y'all played horse.
He was knocking down some uncontested shots, and nobody's around him. But like,
which anybody can do, right? Anybody can do that.
You heard what he just said, right?
He didn't have none of that.
You heard what he just said, uncontested. What do you think, horsey? Horse is uncontested. So what do you think?
It turns into a competition, though. Horse is competition.
It got bad for him, Hatch.
Oh, the truth. I'm glad you told us that, see? Because according to this dude, he thinks he's the nicest NBA.
I'm the nicest.
And I've never seen it. That's all I'm saying.
I'm the nicest dude on here.
No, you're not. You're the third. You're the this guy's second. This guy's third. I hope I'm pointing the right way.
Yeah, that's right. You don't even know what you're doing. I already know what this guy over here is trash, Larry.
Hey, trash. But again, once you start playing, he gonna be donk. He can shoot it when nobody's around yet. He can shoot
you. Both of y'all sound ridiculous. First of all, I got NBA cats that can vouch for me. So whatever you saying on this thread doesn't even make no sense to me.
Fitz, none. I told him. See, he don't want to hear the truth. The truth is, the NBA dudes be lying to him. They be like, you can play, T, you can play. They know he can't play. And T be thinking like it's really him. I'm like, now, they doing that.
First of all, I don't need them to vouch for me.
Just said
I got some NBA dudes that's gonna tell me. I'm going,
I ain't gonna tell
right. I mean, I'm gonna bring somebody with some credibility to the table that's gonna really vouch for my skill set. Man, you play like, man, your game is like a
So one person who does have an eye for NBA talent is the new NBA owner, Mr. Fitzgerald. Tell us about that, owning a little bit of piece of the Phoenix Suns you owning now. Tell us about how that
And Mercury, too, right?
And the Mercury. Yeah, both, right?
Yeah, don't let him cheat you, Larry. Don't let him cheat your paper, dog.
It's okay. I'm not tripping now. But like T told you earlier, I have a very good relationship with the owner, Robert Sarver. We developed a really strong relationship over the last 10 years. And, you know, he asked me if I wanted to come on board. And, you know, I thought he was joking initially because, like, opportunities is like that don't just happen.
Absolutely. Right.
And so, you know, the Lord moves in mysterious ways and presented me with an opportunity that, I just felt like it was great. It was great to be allowed. Not only be a part of the ownership group, but just learn, operations behind the scenes and, you know, watching the analytics and seeing, you know, what, you know, Jermaine Jones and Dame Jones and other, you know, guys on our staff see in players and how they evaluate. And you know, it's been a really, really interesting learning curve and it's been eye-opening for me. And it gave me a greater appreciation for the sport that I've always loved watching basketball. And, you know, to be able to be that close to it is a lot of fun.
Speaking of, I mean, I think this is a great topic to have because, like you said, I mean, you're a minority owner, and obviously there's some news, that's been in the there's a lot of hoopla that's been in the news this week about the Rooney Rule, and obviously, you know, there's some conditioned draft picks for minority coaches and things of that nature. I think, you know, obviously, like I said, the NFL has a long way to go. Just from the standpoint of where you are and where you've positioned yourself. And I think what it really boils down to, and I heard some guys speak on it today, is ideally the owners have to be receptive and bring in people of color, you know, into those ownership roles. And I think that's where it's going to change because of the 31 owners, the 32 owners in the National Football League, it's majority white. And so for somebody, yeah, so well, majority, but that's what I'm saying. I think that's where the issue lies is because if they're not familiar with you, if you're not of their color, their surroundings, then they're not, you have to be voted in. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be tough for, you know, anybody of color to break that barrier. So I think what you've done, and I think obviously a credit to Robert Sarver, but I think it has been established with the friendship that you mentioned over the number of years. Like I said, this has been a 10-year building of a relationship for him to even be comfortable. And as you said, you didn't think this was possible. You thought he was just playing. But as you stated, just the relationship that you established with him, obviously there was something that he saw in you. You've instilled some trust in him for even him to even consider you for that role. So I commend you on that. And I think honestly, the NFL, the owners, they need to take a page out of Mr. Robert Sarver's book.
Well, I mean, T, that's a valid point. And, you know, it does take, somebody taking a chance, giving you an opportunity. And that's
right
for me. But I mean, I see it with the Atlanta Falcons, you know, Mr. Arthur Blank gave, you know, Warwick Dunn an opportunity to be a minority owner down there. I mean, so it happens. A lot of times it's not publicized, but I think there's more and more, guys getting opportunities. And, I think the more guys get in those positions, they do well, they're able to help their organizations, the more opportunities will present themselves. And another thing is, I mean, T, you see the skyrocketing numbers that these organizations are worth. And I mean, it takes a tremendous amount of capital commitment to even get a seat at the table. I mean, the own NBA team is going to cost you $2 billion. I mean, that's going right now. NFL franchises are around the same, if not more expensive. So even if you're given the opportunity to be a minority owner, you're talking about writing a check for $40 or $50 million. And it's just not a lot of guys walking around that are liquid $40 or $50 million that have the ability to put $40, $50 million in a deal that doesn't even cash flow, you know? So it takes a monumental commitment to get involved, but you have to understand that it's a long journey in terms of, you know, finding success and helping your team win. I mean, 'cause there's no exact science to winning. I mean, the Patriots made it look easy for the last, you know,
10 years or so,
15. And then, you know, you look at the dynasty, the Chicago Bulls had, we watched The Last Dance over the last month or so. And, you know, people get lost in the fact that there's been a few people that have been like, dude, but that is not easy to have sustained success. No. And, you know, just trying to look at things differently and trying to have, you know, positive and constructive feedback to, you know, to try to help out and help with the things that you've been successful with and to get a different voice in the room. And, you know, I've been very fortunate that, you know, my opinion on things, they listen and they actually give me the chance to sit in and understand and learn the business. And so I've been blessed with a great opportunity. And I think more of those will be coming for other people.
Now, leaving from, do you want to one day leave basketball and go into the NFL ownership, or you're not even thinking along those lines right now? Yeah, you are.
But I think what he just mentioned is a process. And I think what he's doing with the NBA, establishing himself as an owner, well, he will be able to leverage that
trust,
you know, obviously, you know, making that transition into the National Football League. And so I think, you know, once again, somebody, again, as Robert Sarver has done, give him the opportunity, then that's where I think the ball will start to rolling. But at this point, this given point in time right now, that it's not even possible, because I don't think any of these owners, these white owners in the National Football League, are willing to give anybody of color an opportunity.
Well, see, I mean, I don't want to say that's necessarily true, because I do know quite a few owners around the National Football League very well who have mentored me over the years that are not opposed to having minority ownership a part of their group, actually looking for it, just finding people that are qualified to do it. Not in terms of the integrity or the quality of human being, but has the capital to be able to do it. And also the other part is tough is, you know, you're investing such a large amount of money, but really don't have any say so because you're not a principal owner. You don't have the ability to go out and say, hey, we need to make a trade at point guard, or we need to make a move at a coach, because you don't have that power as a minority owner. You just are literally a silent
at the table. You're at the table. That's
right,
it.
But to my point is that, yeah, you may know a couple. You may know a couple of guys. But as I said, it's a majority vote, though. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, maybe not everybody. Everybody's not going to be receptive to that. So, yeah, you may know a couple of guys here that may be exploring the idea or thinking about it. But at the end of the day, like I said, we know that there's going to have to be a majority vote amongst all the owners to bring somebody of color to the table.
Yeah. And again, if it's somebody of color, there's literally only, there's under 10 names that we know that made the amount of in liquid cash that can even sit at that table. And even all 10, they don't even want to be owner, because like you said, you're putting up 40, 50 million and you don't get no say so. You get a ticket to the game. Like, that's it. And for some of them, that's not good enough, because they want to come in and be like, I'm the boss. Like, you ain't the boss. You know, you got 2%. So,
well, but I think there were a few years back or more. I mean, I think they were talking about Diddy and some other guys. They were trying to put some capital together, I think, to become an owner. I don't know how close they got to that, but
the Carolina, Carolina,
right? Team. Yeah, but at the same time, like, bro, they're gonna have to be voted in at the same time, so it doesn't matter.
Well, see, I also, it would be like this: if you own a team versus that was worth, you know, $2 or $3 billion, right? And a group of people came to you and said, "Hey, I have 20 guys that want to put in, you know, $200 apiece," or you have one guy who can write you a check for cash.
Mm-hmm. Give me that one guy.
Now, wouldn't it be nice to have minority owners, you know, and 10 different partners you have to deal with in the transaction, or just having to deal with one guy? I mean, like, so there's so many different variables and you know, things you have to consider when you're selling the franchise. Do I think this guy is going to move my team? If I have a team in X city, I built this organization here. I want this organization to stay here, but he wants to see it move to a different. I mean, there's so many different things that you have to look at, you know, when you're making those decisions. And And I don't necessarily think race is always the deciding factor in it when those, when they're making a decision. Is it possibly in there? Maybe, but I don't think that's the deciding factor.
And I think probably I would, it's fair to say less of a part of it in basketball and more in football, just because the dynamic of you where see, the NBA and NFL is.
You see, the NBA is a much more, their demographic and their followers are much younger. Much younger. You look at the NFL, their primary followers, you look at the 35 to 60 year old range, right? NBA is much more hip, is associated much more with hip hop culture, you know, so you see newer, younger money in the game. You know, you see younger tech ownership, you know, things of that nature, new money. And the NFL is a lot more established guys. You look at organizations that have had, you know, family ownership for years and years and years.
Right, but that all boils down to marketing, branding. It's not like they can't do, NFL can't do the same thing that the NBA does. Because if you think about Larry, football makes more money than baseball and basketball combined. So you can't say that's the reason. Like I said, there are a lot of hip hop. There's a lot of people that can move that cultural that needle for the game of football.
Well, the business model is different. So you have to look at the business model of the NBA is they sell and push more often the players. They put the players in the forefront. You see James Harden, you see Greg the Freak, you see LeBron James, you see Kevin Durant. They put the players out front. The NFL markets the shield.
And all about that NFL shield.
Right.
And then the players. So,
right, but that goes back to
the way they structure it, you know, and the NBA is much more of a global marketing machine. You know, you go to China, you go to India, you go to Africa, you go to South America. Do they particularly have a team that they follow? No, but there's a player that they really like and they follow that player. You go to China, Kobe Bryant is, he's like a god in China. He's literally like a god over there. Everybody wants to wear his shoes and his jersey and, you know, and so, do they particularly like the Lakers? No, but they love Kobe Bryant. Kobe. It's much easier to market, you know. In the NFL, teams fall on. You grew up in Tennessee, and Hatch, you grew up in Oklahoma. I'm pretty sure you rooted for the Cowboys when you were a child. You know, it's probably closest to.
I was the biggest Ohio. Yes, I was. The funny thing, I was the biggest Steelers fan growing up. But yeah, okay, I get it.
You pulled for a team.
Yes,
this happened to have such and such and such and such, but you were a Steelers guy.
Yeah,
growing up in Tennessee, I mean
Alabama. I'm Alabama over here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You grew up in Alabama.
Yeah, I went to Tennessee, Chattanooga. Yeah, no doubt.
So, I mean, you probably rooted for the Falcons. That's probably the closest team.
No, I didn't root for nobody. I didn't even follow.
He's not a football guy, Fitz. He ain't a football guy at all.
I didn't even follow football, to be honest. But I think, you know, obviously to your point too. I think, the NBA has put the players at the forefront, but I think with the NFL, which is made up of 70%+ minorities, I think that it's on the players now to put themselves at the forefront, you know what I mean, of the situation, because it can't always be the owners dictating everything. Right. So again, it's, you know, the players are doing themselves a discredit because of them not taking advantage and leveraging the power that they have. I think if you look at some of the very guys that you mentioned, the LeBrons, the Chris Paul, the James Hardens, these guys, they have collectively gotten out in front, you know, of the NBA to know that. And Adam Silver, he's very understanding that the league wouldn't be what it is without these players. It's a handful of these guys that will move the needle, but it's more guys in football of color that can do the same thing.
Let me ask you this, T.
Right.
So you're saying when Deshaun Watson comes up for his big deal, or even Patrick Mahomes, they're going to have so much leverage. You're saying that's their chance to be part owner of those organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. If they're business-minded and have a business acumen to think that way, then of course – they should be able to leverage, you know, some of what they're bringing to the table and what they've offered to that organization based on how they conduct themselves, obviously how they play. And then, like I said, you look at Patrick Mahomes, he's won them a championship. So they may be inclined to listen to any type of, business negotiation, you know, if need be.
Is that possible, Fitzy, you think? Is that possible, Bill?
You can't be an owner while you are playing.
No, I'm talking about setting it up after, not actually during that time, but you know, yeah. somewhere, you know, at least planting the seed.
Planting the seed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's all. I mean, we're a lot further than we were in the 90s, obviously, you know, as far as ownership and people being in powerful positions. But again, I think it's going to, you're right. The money that they talk about now, it's ridiculous. And again, even though the players are making so much money, it doesn't come close to what these organizations are worth. Like I said, you're talking about $2 and $3 billion, $4 billion. And for players to be making even $100 million over their career and only taking home 50, they don't have enough money to put into, or to you know, into pro sports. You know, they just don't.
And speaking of, you know, Larry, I think, you know, we obviously know that you're on the tail end of your career. You know, just say you retire after next year, this year or next year or what have you. So do you fully transition into that minority role that you have with the Phoenix Sun and spend more time on the basketball side?
Well, no, I don't know exactly if that's going to be what we my primary role, but I would love if the opportunity presents itself to be, you know, a little bit more involved, you know. But I have a lot of different business ventures I'm doing right now. And
tell us about some of your business ventures that you got.
Well, you know, I have a travel company, Nomad Hill, that I've been in ownership for over 9 years now, and mm-hmm. You know, we've done extremely well, and I'm very fortunate with the way we structure. We haven't, you know, been hurt in that business because a lot of people aren't traveling right now. But, you know, we've been able to stay afloat. I'm in the hospitality business as well, retail development. You know, I'm also investor in many, many different companies, you know, through the venture space. So, I mean, I stay very active. I'm always reading and trying to acquire knowledge, going to seminars and doing briefings and going back to school. I mean, like, I'm always trying to reinvent myself because, you know, when you become stagnant, you know, you lose your creativity. So I always try to, you know, get better and improve in any walk I can.
How much of that information are you passing along to like the younger guys? You know, the younger guys come in, they think it's about spending money and, you know, whatever, Instagram and Twitter and spending money on cars. But like I said, you have that background now. You've made money off the field. You have to kind of give that blueprint to some of these, you know, guys coming in. So how's that been for you?
Well, or you can be like Oprah, just be greedy and just keep all the money to yourself.
Oprah's not greedy at all, actually.
I'm just kidding. That's what Hat said. Hat said she was greedy.
No, that's not the case.
I'm telling you what Hat said. You want me to send you the text?
I ain't never gonna do a crime with you, T.
If you knew Oprah and what she's about, I'm very close with Stedman Graham, like very close. I spent a great deal of time with him, one of the most knowledgeable men I've ever been around. And Oprah has one of the biggest hearts I've ever seen in my life.
Of course.
You know, she does so many things that nobody even knows about. She truly invests in her people, and you know, she makes me proud to know, you know, her family. I mean, she's a wonderful woman. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you that. Like I said, I want to dig a little deeper with that right there. Cause you, like I said, you get to talk to Oprah because you know Stedman, and you get to talk to some of these owners and you get to find out that real blueprint of success. But what about the people out there who are 25, 30 year old entrepreneurs who don't have a phone book like Larry Fitzgerald? Like, what do you say to those type of guys who are just trying to like, yo, I have maybe, you know, a good job and make good money, and I want to invest and be an entrepreneur, but they don't have the phone book that you have. So what's their blueprint for them?
Actually, I didn't have a phone book like Larry Fitzgerald until I had a phone book like Larry Fitzgerald.
You knew me. That's how you knew me. So you was good.
I mean, I understood that you have to cultivate relationships. Every single really, really good friend I have that helps me understand business, they've been unbelievably receptive, which tells me that if you go to them seeking knowledge and understanding, you're willing to work. If they give you a project, I want you to go do this. I want you to read this book. I want you to do this. If they're giving you tasks to improve and make you better, it's no different than a coach telling me, Fitz, you want to run this curl route better? You need to run this route 1,000 times. You need to get the footwork perfectly right. If you get inside leverage, outside leverage, just the way you do it. And if they continue to give me these tidbits, I go out and I perfect the craft. then they give me the next assignment. And that's what I've continued to do, you know, and those relationships are built over years and years of trust and following through when you say you're going to do things. And that's how relationships are developed. No different than, you know, with your quarterback running routes. You know, the reason that, you know, T was out there making them plays with Jeff Garcia is because they spent hundreds of hours, literally running routes and getting that continuity. That's the same approach as businessmen. They do the same thing. And so it just comes down to just putting in the time.
Yeah, I get that. And like I said, you have
the question earlier about the young guys. And I think it's important for me, because I'm in a different place in my life at 36, going into my 17th year than Christian Kirk or Kyler Murray or a young guy. I don't necessarily think those guys should be as focused on
entrepreneurship
I think focus on ball. This is what is your toast. Football is what should be most important to you. When you get that second contract, you still focus on football, but now you can start, you have the financial security now to start investing in yourself to be able to create those opportunities once football is done. You know, I was singularly focused when I got in the league at 20 years old. I didn't care about anything else but, you know, being productive and, you know, achieving the individual goals that I had set for myself. I was, you know, unbelievably intrinsically motivated to do that. And then as I got older, I realized that it was much bigger than me. It wasn't about me going out and get 150 yards, two touchdowns every week. That's great. But is that equating to us winning ball games? Not all the time. And so do I need to be a better blocker? Absolutely. Would that create more opportunities for me in the passing game? Yes. You know, I mean, just so as you want, you understand holistically, conceptually what your team is trying to do, I think it gives you a better understanding of what you need to improve on across all levels.
Now, as an unselfish player as you are, has it ever kind of bothered you that you didn't have that one quarterback throughout your whole career, like, a quarterback that was a 10-time Pro Bowl and you had for 10, 12 years? Because maybe your numbers would have been different, maybe not, but does it bother you at all?
You're asking me or Larry?
Larry, I know it bothers you. I want to
I wish I had
I know you do.
Quarterback for the entirety of my career.
I don't really. It really doesn't matter to me. I mean, I never really approached the game like that. I'm thankful for every opportunity I've gotten, but I've worked for every opportunity I've gotten also. And, life is like that. I mean, guys, you know, I'm more fortunate than others for some particular reason, and that's just the way it goes. And, you know, I never wanted to really compare myself to this guy, compare myself to that guy. That's what the media folks do. I just continue to work at my craft, work on being a better father, a better brother, things that I can improve on that are actually within my tangible grasp, right? And I think we get in trouble when we start worrying about, oh, this guy's making this money and I did this. That's when you start getting to the twilight zone where That stuff doesn't even, how does that affect you on a day-to-day? It doesn't. You don't really have any control of that. So why would you be taking yourself there mentally? So I think that I learned that early on. You know, who's throwing me to the ball? I have no control over who's throwing me the ball.
Right.
That's out of my jurisdiction. But what I can do, I know if I'm open, the percentage of me catching the ball and making plays are much higher. So that's kind of where I focus my attention.
Yeah. That's where you should, because I know who you don't want throwing the ball, and that's that guy right there. You don't want him throwing the ball.
Hey, Fitzy, you know I can throw it. You know I can throw it. That's what you know I can throw this thing.
That's what you don't want. Let's talk about this, man. What's, like I said, you're on the last stretch. As you exit your career, what does success look like? What makes Larry happy and content with walking away from the game? Because like I said, I know last year, the last couple of years, that's been, you know, sort of like the writing on the wall. And I'm not writing you off. I'm just saying, because I see and I understand where you are. And like I said, like for me, I wish I'd have been given the opportunity to kind of finish on my own terms. And I'm obviously the Arizona Cardinals are affording you that opportunity to do that. So what does that look like, you know, for Larry, you know, as the curtain draw to a close?
Well, you know, I first of all don't really look at it like that. I think when you put those parameters, you know, this is going to be it. This is going to be the, you know, like when you start thinking like that, I think you put yourself in a mental place that you don't necessarily need to be. Is this going to be my last year? I don't know. I have no idea. So why would I concern myself with that type of thought process? All I really ever think about, T, is today I got a workout. It was a speed day. I'm gonna run 35 routes today. I'm gonna get my work in. I'm gonna get my lift in. That's gonna make me that much better for when I line up, when I play against whoever I'm playing the first preseason game. And that's what I can't control. That is what I have full control of. Everything else outside of that doesn't really matter because I don't have any control. Now I know if I put the work in the day and I go out there and I do what I've done over my entire career, make plays when the opportunity presents itself, I can still play at a very high level in the National Football League. This is what I know. This is what I've shown. And so for me to like limit myself because of this and because of that, it just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't serve me either. So
yeah, and I only ask that. I only ask that too, because like I said, I'm like I said, I follow basketball, love it. And you saw Kobe do it. You saw Dwayne Wade do it. So you've seen these guys kind of like, you know, give it, you know, going in at just the last hoorah. I think Dwayne Wade, you know, he kind of teetered back and forth his last couple of years. And he's like, oh, this is going to be my last year. Then he's like, this will be my last hoorah. So that's why I asked the question, because like I said, you have to be realistic about the situation, your future. So that's why I asked.
Yeah, no question. You do have to be realistic. And I've always taken that into account. And that's, There's a reason why I've been able to stay in the same place and be able to kind of, you say, age gracefully, because I understood that my role changes and I have to be fluid with how it changes, right? You know, a couple years ago when BA was asked, he asked me to move inside and become more of a blocker, right? Had I done that before? No. But if I wasn't willing to do that, I wasn't going to be here. Mm-hmm. Right. So you learn how to adjust and become, make yourself invaluable. Right. When they see that you go in and you'll be unselfish and willing to do it, they say, you know what, man, we got to give this dude an opportunity because he's willing to sacrifice it here. And so now, you know, there might be a sacrifice I might have to make this year. Yeah. Am I going to be willing to do it? Absolutely. Will I adjust? No question. And that's just how I kind of approach my life.
Like Bruce Lee said, be water, my friend. That's be water.
I already know.
Be water. Hey, Larry Fitzgerald, we appreciate you coming on the show, man. You know, like I said, this is we just commend you on your career, but more importantly, like I said, then between the lines, as you know, it's what you do off the field that you're getting all the accolades, in my opinion. Success for you. Again, you got a lot more coming to you. Like, be way more successful off the field than you are playing football, my friend. So we appreciate you coming on the show, baby.
Hatch, man, I'm still disappointed in you, though, man.
How you talking? What are you disappointed in me
you
for?
You was over at the Pro Bowl, man. What was this, 2011, man.
Hey, no, go ahead and tell it.
Came on over, man, and he was hanging out with us for the whole week over there, and we went skydiving that week. And so it's like
seven, eight
of us. We up in the plane, T. In the plane. He got the jumpsuit, the parachute, everything. We all jump out the plane and Hatch get scared, dog.
No one goes. Hey. But no, they talked me into going up in the plane. Hey. And I was like, I got up there and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing up here. Start to panic, and I was like, no, I'm not going.
He had the nerve to tell me while he go to my office, I can't rob a bank with you. I can't rob no bank with you. You ain't going to go through with it. You're not trying to call me out.
It's hype. It ain't got nothing to do with robbing the bank.
It don't matter. If we going to do it, we all together. Hey, what did Michael Jordan say? All for one, one for all.
Yes, sir.
You weak, dog.
Hey, but afterwards, like I said, this is after I retired. I haven't even ran in probably 5 years,
listen,
right?
He wet his pants though, and we was.
I did not. What are we talking about? Wait a minute. Wait.
On 50. Yourself.
50. Hey. How are you gonna be on here lying?
Hey. Nah.
You wet your pants. You was kind of like urine at the bottom.
I feel bad for you.
He was like, Fitz, I bet you can't beat me in a foot race, right?
I said, I bet you can't beat me in the 40.
I spotted him 5 yards. I gave him a 5 yard head start.
Oh, I believe that.
And he beat me. And, you know, I kicked him down.
I was like, there ain't no way you going to beat me in a 40, Fitz, right? So it was on just a regular old. Hey, I tell you, you won't neither. right? We just had a little dirt road, whatever, like a little bit of concrete. We found the pad was 40 yards. And I was like, ain't no way you gonna beat me, Fitzy. We was like, bet 10 racks. And Fitzy's like, bet it. I was like, all right, bet. I got down there and I was like, ain't no way in whatever that I'm gonna lose to Fitzy. Again, he was okay, but I was fast. I had my start. And I knew just because I hadn't ran doesn't mean I don't have my start. I took off on this dude. He started to catch me at the end, but them first 20, I was out, Fitz. And we had it on camera, and I wish I had it on camera still.
I beat him by like 2 yards.
You ain't gonna beat nobody, man.
Bet 10 racks. Bet me 10 racks. Bet me 10 racks. I won't beat you by 2 yards. Run a
butt naked too,
hey, I stripped down to the skivvies. I stripped down to the skivvies. I was like, I gotta be light. I gotta be light. And Hawaii over there, man, that was a good time.
Hey, brother. Speaking of that, when Larry played in that Super Bowl, when he caught that that little slant, that's how he was running. Boy, he was running like his hair was on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And I ain't going to tell a lie, Larry, I ain't never seen you run that fast, dog.
He never like ran that fast,
dog. Bro, I don't know what you took. I don't know if you were just hype. You were just amped from that, just the Super Bowl. I know you were because we've played in the Super Bowl before, so I get you. He don't understand. That dude over there, he don't really understand.
Hey,
so I know that energy,
you
dog.
Know, yeah, you know what?
That ball, dog. Hey, Larry, you was up out of there, dog.
Yeah.
Dog, you was up out of there.
See, you seen that at practice last year when you came out of practice with us that one day. I still got that gas, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You got it now. And hey, tell this child. Hey,
that's the burst.
He came instructional. You know, he came out there and did his thing with us, man.
Hey, Larry.
Okay, all right. I'm sure he told y'all everything I told him because he don't know that.
Never. Hey, Larry. Your coaches know I can still go, Colonel Larry.
No question.
Still can go.
Got it.
Right now. Right now.
You were sore the next day, though.
He was so. He ain't gonna tell you. See what I'm saying? He ain't never gonna admit it. He was sore, Fitzy.
I was working out. I was working out the next day.
He had to borrow some cleats. You know, you can't go out there and practice with some brand new cleats on. He had to
go
some brand new
joints. Your feet gonna be hurting.
Hey. Oh, yeah. Now, my feet were sore. That's what was up, bro. Them shoes weren't even broken in, dog. My feet was barking the next day. But speaking of the Super Bowl, I remember, I don't know if you remember, I met you
in Pablo in the hotel that night, man. It was, we had switched
hotels. Tell the people about it, yeah.
We was switching hotels. We didn't tell us nothing. And so Saturday after walkthrough, they just said, pack a day bag. We got back to the hotel, pack a day bag. We moving. I'm like, what? You know, so they moved us to a different hotel. And as we were coming in, he was getting in the streets that night. You know, so I seen him and Pablo, they was walking by and we sat down and we chopped it up. And he kind of said, look, this is some of the things that I was thinking about when we played the Patriots, you know, down in Jacksonville. And, you know, he was coming off that broken ankle. Nobody knew he was going to even, you know, be able to play, and went out there and did his thing like he always does. And he was kind of talking to me about the mindset that's going to be required to play at that level and to be able to have the sustained success. Don't let the moment be too big for you. And like, so all that was really big for me to be able to get that kind of tutelage and that kind of knowledge the night before the game. So big bro, I appreciate that, man. And I know you had, I know you had a good time that night. You looked like you about to go turn up.
Oh yeah. Man, no doubt. We was in
eight in the morning. I guarantee.
Yeah, we was at Tampa. Hey, boy,
he was out till 8 in the morning.
Was it Ybor City or somewhere like that?
Ybor City.
Man, I was in them streets.
And how long ago was that? That was what, 2001?
It was 2008 season, 2009. It was February 2009.
2009, and I bet he got an 11-year-old right now. I'm gonna leave it just right there. You got an 11-year-old somewhere in Tampa right now. Already.
says the guy that peed on himself that didn't want to jump out the airplane.
Why do you say that?
You left that out, dog. You peed on yourself.
I left that out because it never happened. I don't even
know. You peed on yourself, dog. I can't
believe
it. Grown ass man, dog.
I gotta get Patrick Peterson on the show so he can set the story straight. That's messed up, Fitzy. That's all right, dog. We appreciate you coming on and get your popcorn ready podcast, fam. Love you, brother.
All right, good to see y'all, man.
All right, my man. Do your thing. Stay safe, brother.
Yes, sir.
All right. Peace. So that's Larry Fitzgerald on Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast. Yo, nephew.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good dude, man. Like I said, good character guy. Everything he's done on the field, again, it's. I appreciate the way he's handled it. Because, again, you know how we're receivers, right? We know how diva-ish we can be, you know? And it just that part of it for him, it just never came out. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys, obviously, just you hear people say the consummate pro, a pro's pro. Mm-hmm. And he's one of those guys, I mean, obviously, it's going to continue to play and has had a hellified career. But yeah, I mean, you can't ask more of a guy like that. And then that's the thing. Like sometimes, you know, good things happen to good people. Mm-hmm. And just to speak on his career and some of the business ventures that he's been able to establish. And then again, just establishing a relationship with prominent people that have, you know, showed him the way, paved him the way. And then obviously, like I said, he can pass that on to some of the younger guys.
Yeah, yeah. And I think let's talk about our three and out, like our three and out segment. We talked about the 3 points that, you know, we want to bring up that we got from the interview. And again, for me, number one is the ownership piece, because, again, you're sitting in the room with the owners, and as a young African-American male, you want to be like, I'm going to tell the world. I'm an owner of a professional sports team in America. I'm the dude. But it's really not like that, right? If you're going to be a professional minority sports owner, you're at the table and you're not making no big money. It's not for you to be on Twitter. It's not for you to be on the court shooting, you know, or anything like that. It's really about, you know, being behind the scenes, learning and knowing in 5 to 10 years, like that's how long this learning curve is going to be. And
he's not Mark Cuban by any means.
No, not at all. You know what I'm saying? Like, but to be, it's funny to sound like, it's funny how it's going to sound to be a humble owner, but that's what owning a pro sports team is at our age. And I think that's why you don't see a lot of the younger athletes trying to be in ownership, because it's not going to be nothing sexy about it. It's not going to be cool. Right. You know, you're not on social media talking about I'm the owner. You're going to sit back, you're going to learn, and you're going to help the organization from a back seat.
Right. Yeah. And I think the number two for me, I think, would be just that I asked him about, you know, obviously, you know, so like a farewell, you know, tour, or just his thinking process of this possibly, you know, what is he looking at as the curtain closes? But he said he's not really looking at it to close. So I thought that was very interesting.
I think our third thing for three and out was the advice he gives like rookies and second year kids. You know, it's like he's not going to tell, because again, he's made so much money off the field. He's doing all these business ventures off the field. But at the same time, first year guys and rookies, third year guys, they need to focus on their craft. So that's what he's telling them. And even when you get your first contract, now you can branch out a little bit, but still focus on your craft, because that's what's getting you paid. That's what's going to make you this money. And I think that's very good advice, where these kids come in and they think they want to do everything. Cause that's kind of was me when I was young. I want to do everything. I'm like, no, just focus on your craft.
Right. Just do one thing. Find what that is. Do that great. And then the rest will fall in place.
Alrighty. There it is. Thank you, Larry Fitzgerald. Appreciate you coming to the show. Get your popcorn ready podcast with your host Hatch and my boy.
Yes, sir. T.O. right here. And don't forget to subscribe on the Himalaya app or wherever you get your podcast. And also subscribe on my YouTube channel, Terrell Owens.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. See you next week. Tune in. Peace.
Yeet. No doubt.